Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine with you on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 9.5 minutes past 6 o'clock on this last day of April, Wednesday, April the 30th. Should the legal drinking age in this state, in this country, be lowered from 21 to 18? We know some states, like Wisconsin, are considering bills that would lower the drinking age for military personnel, with supporters saying anyone who's old enough to go to war should be old enough to have a beer. And there are some other states, including Minnesota, that have proposals in the hopper, so to speak, that would lower the drinking age to the general population. Another state that's considering lowering the drinking age is Vermont, where our guest this hour is from. He is a former college president who says the 21-year-old drinking age is bad social policy and a terrible law. John McCardle founded a group that is working to change the legal drinking age, and we will wonder this hour if you agree with his efforts or not, or what questions you have. 1-800-642-1234, toll free from anywhere. In Madison, please use 263-1890 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. John McCardle is the former president of Middlebury College in Vermont. He is the founder and director of Choose Responsibly, a nonprofit group that is opposed to the 21-year-old drinking age laws. He joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning. It's great to be with you, Joy.
Yeah, thanks for being with us. Your group sent us some material last week telling us that last Friday was an anniversary in Wisconsin when we became, 75 years ago, the second state in the union to repeal prohibition. But you say that prohibition is still there for 18 to 20-year-olds.
Well, it's pretty hard to view the current law, if you're 18, 19, or 20, as anything other than prohibition. The law is very simple and very straightforward, and it says that the legal drinking age is 21. Now, your state and others do have exceptions to that law, which are permitted by the federal statute, which, among other things, permits young adults to consume alcohol in the presence of their parents.
Right.
But your state is an exception, and for the most part, prohibition nationwide for young adults is absolute.
Also in the news last week, though, Wisconsin made some national headlines for having the most drunk drivers in the nation, or at least a quarter of those surveyed admitted to drinking and driving. That embarrassed a lot of people here. Apparently, though, a number of states in the upper Midwest also have a similar thing going on. Bad timing for you to be suggesting we lower the drinking age when we're looking at headlines like that?
Not at all. And I think this is a very important distinction to be made that isn't always made by people whose primary focus is drinking and driving. To begin with, nobody favors drinking and driving.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody is against that, not simply some groups, not simply some genders. I think we need to be very careful about separating the problem of drinking and driving from the issue of the drinking age. As I read that report and others, I see very little evidence that this proves that legal age 21 is working. What it seems to say to us is that we need to do a better job of focusing on drinking and driving and not mislead ourselves into thinking that simply by hitting the easy button of raising the drinking age to 21, we've solved that problem. If that were really the case, then we'd go back to total prohibition, wouldn't we? Because that would solve the drinking and driving problem entirely. These are separate questions,
mm-hmm.
and I think that we confuse ourselves if we commingle them.
But wasn't it high rates of drinking and driving and even traffic fatalities in that younger age group that was part of the impetus back in 1984 that led to the federal law telling states to raise their drinking ages or lose federal highway funds?
You're absolutely right, and one might argue that that was a false premise. The basis for changing the law was indeed the problem of drinking and driving, which was a nationwide problem and was not limited to 18 to 20-year-olds. Indeed, the founder of Mothers Against Drunk Driving lost a child to a drunk driver who was 48 years old and had had multiple convictions. So a 21-year-old drinking age had, in fact, very little to do with that tragic situation. But you're quite right. The basis for changing the law was the belief that we could bring down alcohol-related traffic fatalities, and in fact we have over the last 25 years. But that decline has happened in every age group, not just 18 to 21. The decline began before the law was changed in 1984. And perhaps worst of all, to go along with the report that you cited a few moments ago, alcohol-related fatalities reached a 10-year high in 2006. So let's focus on drinkers who drive. Let's consider ways of taking those menaces off the road. Let's not pretend that we're solving that problem by stigmatizing and ostracizing a particular group of people simply on the basis of age.
Yeah. Well, even if the drinking age and the drunk driving don't necessarily go hand in hand, why lower the drinking age? What's the harm in keeping it at 21?
Well, lowering the drinking age, in my view, is where you wind up after examining the problem. It's not where you start. Where you start is surveying the current landscape and asking what the culture of alcohol is, particularly among young adults. And when you conduct that survey, the picture is not very pretty. Alcohol consumption, in fact, has not declined very much since the law has been on the books. So on its own terms, it's hard to argue that this law has been very effective. Where it has been effective is in driving alcohol out of public view and out of public places. So where does that leave? Well, it leaves clandestine locations. It leaves places beyond the easy reach of the law. It leads to dark corners, behind closed doors, farmers' fields, places that are most risky, least supervisable, and places where things like binge drinking are much more likely to occur. So when we look at this and when we see furthermore that our laws in every other respect have defined 18 as the age of majority, the current generation of young adults have no reason to know where 21 came from or why. It looks arbitrary. It looks capricious. What they're engaging in is an act of civil disobedience of what they believe to be an unjust and incomprehensible law. And all we've done as a result is put young adults at higher risk. We've marginalized their parents. We have abridged the age of majority, and we've led to the creation of things like fake IDs, which are based on ethical compromises and that can breed disrespect for law across the board. Let's focus on drinking and driving, but let's not confuse that with a drinking age.
We will check our weather forecast and then welcome your thoughts about whether or not we should lower the drinking age. For our guest, John McCardle is the founder and director of Choose Responsibly, an organization that opposes the 21-year-old drinking age. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. It's coming up on 19 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Wednesday, April the 30th. Coming up this afternoon, it's At Issue with Ben Marins after 5. As oil prices escalate and demand outstrips supply, the U.S. needs to reassess its dependence on oil, according to Ben's guest, coming up after 5 o'clock this afternoon. We're talking about whether or not we should lower the legal drinking age. Our guest this hour says yes, says the 21-year-old drinking age is a mistake, and we will wonder if you agree with him or not. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison 263-1890 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Our guest is John McCardle, founder and director of Choose Responsibly. He is the former president of Middlebury College in Vermont. To the phones we go, and Allie in Brewer is with us. Hi, Allie, you're on the air.
Hi.
And I'm sorry, Allie, where are you from?
Oconomowoc.
Oconomowoc. Okay, all right, go ahead.
Yes, I just wanted to say that I agree with the person on today with Choose Responsibility. I saw and witnessed, my kids are 23 and 25 now, but what he said, I totally witnessed kids sneaking drinking in places where parents aren't, and at the college level, many, many kids having fake IDs and drinking binge style. And I just think that it's the parents' responsibility to teach their children, as they do everything else, how to drink responsibly. And we have constantly, constantly stressed not drinking and driving. And I have noticed today, even when they're over the age of 21, it's an automatic thing for them. They were over No, they were over on Friday night for my daughter's 23rd birthday, and we said, would you like a glass of champagne or do you want wine? And automatically, she just said, you know what, I want just one glass of wine because I'm going out with friends later and I'll be driving. They just constantly associate how much drinking and driving and just to be extremely responsible in that area. And so I'd like to see it go to 19.
Mm-hmm. John McArdle?
Well, I think the caller makes several interesting points, and I think that the designated driver, which was not even a part of our vocabulary back in 1984, is commonplace now, not just among the college age generation, but among all adults. And I think that that kind of practice is a reminder that you can educate the public about the risks of drinking and driving, and in fact demonstrates that education about alcohol, which Choose Responsibility also advocates, is probably a more effective approach to the issues of alcohol and the presence of alcohol in our society than simple passage of laws and exhortation through prohibition lectures.
Yeah. Your group, Choose Responsibility, is advocating a different approach to alcohol education, including licensing of young people or young adults?
We think that the principal impediment to a public debate of this issue is the provision in the federal law that penalizes a state 10% of its highway fund if it sets the age lower than 21. And so what we believe should happen, first of all, is that Congress should eliminate that penalty. My guess is that the debate on the state level will flourish once that happens, and very good new ideas will surface. Our view is that lowering the age should not be done by itself, and that it should be accompanied by some program of alcohol education and licensing, rather like driver's education, where young people are actually prepared to make responsible decisions. Right now, we simply assume that somehow when they wake up on their 21st birthday, they will know all about alcohol and responsible use of it, and it's quite obvious that they don't. So lowering the age is only a part of what we're advocating, but we think that taken together, these things will improve the current situation, which is not very good and which is the result of legal age 21. Mm.
Thanks to Ellie. Next, we go to Dave in Beloit. Hi, Dave.
Hi, how are you doing? I couldn't disagree with your guest more, and I believe the current situation is good. This the 21 drinking age is not arbitrary and capricious. It was born out of a history of a patchwork of laws from surrounding counties and states, and the federal government made people come in line by using that club of highway funds because they saw that every time the drinking age was lowered, the alcohol-related death rate for kids below the drinking age was raised because alcohol became more accessible to them. So there's plenty, and the Department of Transportation Wisconsin has plenty of facts, statistics to bear this out. Every time you lower the drinking age, the alcohol-related accident and death rate for kids below the drinking age goes up because now alcohol is more accessible to them because they now have friends closer in their age group that they can get alcohol from.
Mm-hmm. John McArdle?
Well, the caller talks about every time you lower the age. I think he's talking about the one time we did that. And the one time we did that, we simply did it. We didn't include education. We didn't include licensing. We didn't have things like ignition interlocks to install in cars that would take people who've been convicted of DUI off the road. So I'm not sure we're comparing apples and apples here and dealing with hypotheticals. I would also point out that most of the rest of the world has come out in a different place on this issue. The United States is among a very small number of countries with an age as high as 21. And while those comparisons may not necessarily be exact, the best example is Canada, which I think is probably most like us, where the age is 18 or 19 in all of the provinces, and where alcohol-related fatalities have tracked almost the same as in this country, both on the way down and on the way up. That's hardly evidence to show that the drinking age and alcohol-related fatalities have much to do with one another.
They have, hello?
Yeah,
hello?
Go ahead, Dave.
Again, they have an exact correlation to do with one another. I would speculate what would happen to the alcohol-related accident death rate for teenagers if Canada raised their age to 21, but that's that's an aside. Okay, so these are actual facts and statistics. And the history of the drinking age in Wisconsin was 21. Then people pushed for changes back in the early 70s and through the 70s. Then it went to 19. And then they saw what was happening when they kept lowering it, so they put it back to 21. So it's not like they just decided, let's kick it up to 21. The state of Wisconsin had ample experience to see, and they played with the drinking age. And this isn't going to do any good for the safety of our kids and teenagers if all the other border states don't get in line, and that was a big problem. Years ago as a police officer in Lake Geneva, Wisconsin, was crazy with kids when the drinking age was 19 or 20. It was in Illinois, and it was 18 in Wisconsin. They would just come into the state and binge, and you can't force other states around you to raise or lower their drinking age to match yours to prevent all those alcohol-related injuries, yeah, accidents, and deaths that are going to happen.
Yeah. What about that border issue?
Well, sir, with all due respect, Wisconsin did not change its law until the federal pressure to change the law came along. I think that the border issue is addressed to the degree that license portability is or is not permitted. Again, we're not simply talking about lowering the age willy-nilly without anything else happening, which is what we did in the 70s. We're talking about mandatory education. We're talking about licensing. And we're looking at a case to the north where fatalities went down at about the same rate during the 80s and 90s where the drinking age stayed at 18 or 19. It is all about education. It's all about making people understand about alcohol. It's not about lecturing them. It's not about punishing them. It's not about treating them as children in this single respect.
Thank you, Dave. Next we go to Rick in La Crosse. Hi, Rick.
Hi. Rick is my pseudonym. I'm a Brazilian from the state of São Paulo in Brazil. Brazil has Germans and Polacks and Italians like Wisconsin. And it's primarily the states of Rio Grande do Sul, St. Catharines, Santa Catarina. We don't have a drinking age, okay? Now, when I was in college, I went to college in the U.S. I went to Europe. I lived in France for a year and visited the land of my forebears in Portugal. They really don't enforce the drinking ages. High school students get to have a pression or a cap in the high school cafeteria. Nobody gets smashed. Everybody drinks. They have wine, they have beer, they have whatever. Here's my theory.
Very quickly, we're at news time.
In the U.S., you have all these laws. They create taboos. It's a natural human inclination to break taboos. And then there's Tavern League. The Tavern League wants you to drink at the taverns, and so they create these laws. In Madison, you can't buy beer or alcohol after 9. In La Crosse, you can't.
Yeah, I would get you, Rick. I'm going to check news from National Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we will get our guest to respond to your comments. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 6:30 on this Wednesday, April the 30th. We're talking with a guest who says the legal drinking age in this country should be lowered, who says the 21-year-old drinking age is a mistake, is bad policy. We welcome your thoughts and questions for him at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Wisconsin has a bill in the legislature that would lower the drinking age for military personnel. Similar bills are being considered in Kentucky and South Carolina. There are some states that are considering proposals to lower the drinking age for the general population, including in Missouri, South Dakota, Vermont, and Minnesota. Our guest is John McCardle, founder and director of the group Choose Responsibility. He is formerly the president of Middlebury College in Vermont. John McArdle, we just heard from a caller before news time, Rick in La Crosse, who is from Brazil, and said that they don't have a big problem with, kids binging and getting out of hand drinking in Brazil. He cited the same situation in Europe where he spent some time and thinks it's the taboo of drinking that causes it to be such a problem in this country. What do you say about that?
That certainly does seem to be the case and is repeatedly the experience of our young people who go and spend time studying abroad, who see a very different mode of behavior among their peers when they're in some country other than their own. And they come back to this country even more mystified by what it is about us that either makes us uniquely irresponsible or possess some kind of unique insight on the presence of alcohol. Another interesting point that the last caller made, it seems to me, and is worth thinking about in this case, is that we're not simply talking about college students. We're talking about the college-age population.
Mm-hmm.
Supporters of 21 claim that while it may be a problem on college campuses, it's working just great in blue-collar America. I don't think there's much evidence to show that, and it might be interesting to hear from a caller to talk to us a little bit about that issue, about the non-college population and how well the drinking age is working.
Yeah. Well, you suspect, as we have heard here in Wisconsin, that even high schoolers and non-college attending students in rural Wisconsin are partying it up in the farmer's field, right?
It seems to me that to say this is just something that concerns the elitists is to dismiss the problem without paying much attention to it.
Yeah. He also, I don't know if you have a comment on that, you can't buy alcohol in Wisconsin at grocery stores after 9 p.m., but you can go to a tavern. He thought the Tavern League had a lot of control over that. Any thoughts on that?
I'm really not expert on those details, but what I do think is that if we're allowed to have this debate about how well the age is working without impediment, we're going to have discussions of just that sort, and it ought to allow us to decide where and under what terms and through whose auspices alcohol might be purchased, possessed, or consumed. Right now, the public is not allowed to have that debate.
An email from Kurt in Westby who says, I would support a law that says a person can drink upon receiving a high school diploma or age 19, whichever comes first. 18 is too young.
I think that's yet another example of the kind of discussion that our elected officials ought to be having but won't have as long as this penalty of highway funds is hanging over their heads. And I think the caller makes a very reasonable suggestion. Mm-hmm. Certainly Choose Responsibility believes that the holder of a license and therefore the legal permission to drink should not be extended to anyone who hasn't completed high school and who hasn't completed an alcohol education course.
Mm-hmm. Next, we go to Paul in Marshall. Hi, Paul. You're on the air.
Hi. How are you?
Very good. Thanks for calling.
Well, I was listening this morning, and I want to share my 30 years in higher education. I'm an alcohol educator, a trainer, and a former dean of students. And I can tell you from my experience that it's about responsibility, and it's about we can't let students and young people, 18 to 21 or 19 to 21, whatever we want to debate, drink behind closed doors, as your speaker talked about this morning. We've got to bring it out into the open. We've got to be able to talk about responsible behavior and responsible drinking, and we can't do this with 18-year-olds when they hide it. There's been a couple recent college surveys, I think done by Harvard, that compared colleges that had liberal alcohol policies and had served alcohol on campuses as opposed to colleges who had very strict alcohol policies and didn't permit alcohol to be served on campuses. And there is no significant difference, statistical difference, between drinking behaviors or binge drinking in either one of those colleges or either one of those groups. So what I want to advocate is the same thing your speaker does. is let's talk about the problem, talk about responsible behavior, whether it's a college population or a high school population or a blue-collar population. We've got to talk about a licensing process, a training process, talk about responsibility, whether it's done by schools or it's done by parents or done by the community. We've got to talk about behaviors and responsible behavior in drinking. That's what I really believe we need to do.
Mm-hmm. John McArdle?
Well, your caller identifies what has impressed me as nothing short of a chasm that separates the two sides on the issue of alcohol education. In my view, he is on the right side of that chasm, but the chasm is very deep. And on the one hand, there are those who believe that the appropriate approach to alcohol, whether on college campuses or otherwise, is abstinence only. And the other side believes that if alcohol is a reality, then what we should be engaging in is education and harm reduction. Those two sides talk past each other. They have very, very little in common. And until that chasm is breached, I'm afraid we're going to continue to see these two diametrically opposed and often rather moralistic approaches to alcohol education persist.
We had a couple of callers wanting to know if you have any connections to taverns or alcoholic beverage companies. I guess looking at your motivation for your effort here.
I know that the public tends to be suspicious about such things, and I'm asked this question often. Mm-hmm. But in fact, neither I nor our organization receives a penny from the beverage industry or anyone connected to it, to the best of our knowledge. We have come to these conclusions really entirely on our own, and we have been very pleasantly surprised by the number of people who have come to our website at chooseresponsibility.org and said they agree with us and want to work with us on advancing this discussion. But no, the beverage industry has nothing to do with what Choose Responsibility is about.
Yeah. And again, why did you decide to take on this effort?
Well, I was a president of a college and a parent of two young people at the same time during the 1990s. And the household and the campus are similar in that you see how laws, however well-intentioned, actually play themselves out. And this law is a case in point. You have two choices, whether you're president or whether you're a father. You either say the law is in force here, the same as it is everywhere else, and you feel real good doing that. But you also know that in this particular case, a young person is simply going to go somewhere less safe and violate the law. The only other option is to look the other way and say, well, we know what the law says, but we think in any case, this is an instance where it should be violated. And that's irresponsible parenting and irresponsible academic leadership as well. We might as well say, if you don't feel like fastening your seatbelt, don't fasten it. So the law presents two impossible choices. And on a college campus, think of a city or a state where two different sets of laws applied. And you, as the official in that entity, didn't know by looking at someone which set of laws govern their behavior. It's an impossible governance situation, and yet that's what college campuses are facing these days. So there was no particular incident that brought me to this. It was the cumulative effect of this law, which is what led me to say in that essay that I think it's bad social policy and I think it's bad law.
We are talking with John McArdle, as you heard, who says the 21-year-old drinking age is bad social policy, a terrible law, and that the legal drinking age should be lowered along with more or better alcohol education. 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. What do you think? In Madison, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. John McArdle is the founder and director of the nonprofit group Choose Responsibility. He is the former president of Middlebury College in Vermont. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up after 7 o'clock, in light of an increase in suicide among veterans, I'll be talking with the Executive Director of Veterans for Common Sense about the group's lawsuit against the Veterans Administration. That's coming up after 7. We're talking about whether or not we should lower the legal drinking age. 1-800-642-1234 and Madison 263-1890. Our guest says yes, and our next caller is Mary Ann in Mequon. Hi, you're on the air.
Thank you. I was curious if the guest has any information on the effects of alcohol and the developing brain, given that they've done studies that the brain actually, for young people, doesn't finish developing until age 24, 25. And I understand that his research would be a component of that, or but if he has any knowledge, and I'll take my answer off the air.
I have heard that brought up as a reason why we should not lower the drinking age, John McArdle.
That's a great question, and in fact, if public policy were to be based solely on that research, we should raise the age to 25, as the caller suggests. Dr. Scott Swartzwelder at Duke University, who is one of the preeminent scholars of adolescent brain development, happens to be a member of the board of Choose Responsibility.
Really?
And he makes exactly that point, that the research shows that the brain of an adolescent rat is not fully developed until the approximate human age of 25. But that research goes on to show that unless we're going to set the age at 25, which no one is seriously proposing, it's also misleading to say that, therefore, 21 must be kept in place because of brain development. What he says, and what many of those who have looked at the research make clear, is that it's education about alcohol rather than the setting of the age that ought to be our focus. And in fact, one sees a very high correlation between early exposure to alcohol and serious physiological and neurological damage in ages 13 to 18. That risk is reduced dramatically between 18 and 21. And the final point is, if we are concerned about brain development, why do we insist upon a law that is forcing young people to drink in clandestine locations where they're simply increasing the risk of brain damage? It seems to me that, that's just a backwards response to this problem.
Thank you, Mary Ann. Linda in Oconto is with us. Hi.
Hi. I have a question or a comment for the speaker, I guess. I'm an older mom, and over time I've kind of watched what other people have done with their kids, and there's almost like two camps. One camp says, hey, the kids are going to drink anyway. Let's let them do it. Let's facilitate that. They have parties at their home and so forth. The other camp says, no, I know it's not responsible for kids under 21 to drink. And they say, and they educate their children by saying, this is the law, and this is what we're going to do. And I've kind of gone with that camp. And the reason I've done that is that having been through the 70s when the drinking age was 18, I saw the devastation and the problems. And I do agree that there's a tremendous need for the drinking age to be 21. And when you lower it below that, the risks that were very, very clear to our generation, the older generation, and the demand for, so I guess as a parent, it's helpful for me to be able to say, I'm sorry, honey, I want you to know my values are that it's against the law to drink, and you know, I want you to honor those, you know, my wishes and my, you know, I want you to know my opinion, rather than just saying they're going to do it anyway. Let's just educate them on how to do it responsibly. You know, I guess that's I feel very strongly about that.
Linda, what can you tell me before I have our guest respond? What sort of devastation did you see when we had an 18-year-old drinking age?
Well, first of all, because it was legal, it was almost like encouraged. It was kind of like, well, everybody's going to do it. It's legal now, and it gives if you've ever had an 18 or 19 or 20 year old, having been one, you think you're an adult in many ways, but in other ways, you're still growing up and maturing. And so when the culture says at 18 you should start, basically, it's kind of saying you should start drinking, and the kind of devastation is drunken driving, walking out a window, thinking you know all sorts of irresponsible sexual activity, and drinking and driving is a big one. Our state has a poor reputation already for drinking and driving,
right? Which we addressed a little bit earlier. But what about those concerns or arguments, John McArdle?
I think your caller makes a very compelling case for parental responsibility and discretion
which an arbitrary law of the sort we have now effectively prohibits for the parents of anyone under 21. Certainly choose responsibility doesn't advocate wild, unsupervised drinking, but it does advocate parental responsibility. And in a majority of the states right now, parents are not permitted to exercise that responsibility because of 21. We need to keep in mind that nothing magical happens on the day you wake up and turn 21. And if we're going to have a drinking age, whatever that age might be, let's think about how well we're preparing young adults to make responsible decisions. It would never occur to us to simply toss the keys to an automobile to someone who reached driving age, and yet that essentially is how we deal with the issue of alcohol. And as I say, 18 is where I come out. It's not where I start. I look at how we've defined the age of majority. I look at what most of the rest of the world has done. I look at the fact that alcohol is a reality in the lives of young people. And so I conclude that the goal of public policy should be to create the safest possible environment for that reality and not try to deny it.
Yeah. Well, I didn't want to use myself as a first-person experience here.
Ahead.
But when I was 18, when it was an 18-year-old drinking age in Wisconsin, I was going to school. I grew up in a household that, I could have the Tom and Jerry, a sip of a Tom and Jerry at Christmas time, or a sip of Dad's port wine once in a while. He didn't, it wasn't that taboo kind of thing. And I think that as an adult at 18, away from home, as in college with the legal drinking age, I probably did not drink responsibly. And I'm wondering, what sorts of, really, will kids turning 18 or 19 or 21, whatever the case may be, can you really be taught to be really responsible when it comes to that?
I think you can be encouraged to be responsible, and I think you should have the opportunity to give that kind of leadership by example, as it sounds like your parents and so many other parents have done and tried to do. The reality is that once those young people go off to college, alcohol is a presence in those lives. And so it really isn't a question of can we simply pass a law to remove that risk. Much as we would like to create a risk-free environment in our lives, the reality is that we can't. Life is full of risks, and unfortunately, alcohol is one of them. And to think that simply by passing a law raising the age, we're going to minimize or eliminate that risk is naive and, in fact, is life-threatening. More than 1,000 lives of 18 to 24-year-olds each year are being lost off the highways. That's not a ringing endorsement of how well the current law is working.
Thank you, Linda, for the call. Richard in Pittsville, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks. I've lived in quite a few places around the country, and there's a few states that have a split drinking law where they allow people between 18 and 21 to drink beer, and then you have to be 21 in order to drink alcohol. And I think that worked pretty well in those states.
Well, I think if the federal government found that was going on in any states now, those highway funds would be cut. But you're quite correct. There was a time when there was that differentiation in a number of states.
Yeah. I used to live down in Georgia. It was like that. And then South Carolina was like that.
Yeah, that was it was like that for a while here too, but it was during the Vietnam War, wasn't it? That it became 18 became the age of majority all over the country.
It came along after the Constitution lowered the voting age. That's right. That amendment passed in 71, and it was in the wake of that many states revisited the age of majority in other particulars.
Yeah. Next, we go to Tim in Mishicot. Hi, you're on the air.
Good morning. I too grew up in the days of the minor bars here in Northeastern Wisconsin. The thing is that nobody's willing to fund interesting and exciting and desirable entertainment for these young people. Now, you let some fellow sell beer and he makes enough profit that he will supply that 7-day-a-week entertainment place. The kids need a place to go.
Yeah. Oh, is that part? Yeah, I get it. John McArdle, we need to have more places for these young adults to be socializing.
I think that is a part of the problem and part of the solution, yes. And certainly I don't believe that alcohol is the only way a young person can have fun. But I think the public availability and presence of alcohol is likely to reduce the bad behavior that we see out in the open is generally better than behind closed doors in most respects. And at the same time, ought to create a social environment where young people can, in fact, choose responsibility, which doesn't necessarily mean choosing to drink, but have those choices respected.
Yeah. Well, we only have a minute to go. You had a number of listeners agreeing with you this hour. Any public policymakers or congresspeople agreeing with you?
Well, actually, a congressman from your state, Congressman Petrie, mm-hmm. has been, I think, a very consistent voice on this subject. And our own Senator Leahy in Vermont, for example, back in 1984, voted against raising the age. He saw it as an age discrimination issue. So there certainly are public policymakers on the record. The fact is our work right now is more of this sort, trying to engage the public in this debate than it is to try to get the policy changed. But highway reauthorization comes up next year, and we think that that provides the opportunity to talk about this 10% penalty. Mm-hmm. And see if we can't get that changed so that the public debate can proceed.
Thank you so much for being with us.
Well, thank you for having me.
John McArdle, founder, director of Choose Responsibility. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.